and welcome to another edition of the Armchair Directors. For each episode, we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. This week on the show, we are doing something a little bit different. Instead of doing a movie or a particular director, we're just going to do a retrospect of the entire year of 2016. So we're just going to do a little retrospect. So with me to talk about is Professor Mary Dutter. Professor Dutter, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much.
So I think one thing, looking at my list of the films I looked at this year, I think one thing this will be remembered for, like, say, 30 years from now, is just how this is the year that almost really kickstarts this oversaturation of comic book movies. Because you get about 3-4 a year, you had 6 this year.
Yeah.
You had 2 from DC with Batman v Superman and Suicide Squad. You had 2 from 20th Century Marvel with X-Men Apocalypse and Deadpool. And then you had 2 from the Marvel Cinematic MCU, Marvel Studios and Disney, what they did, Doctor Strange and Captain America Civil War. And there's even one little, I didn't see it as an indie superhero movie called Gimme Shelter, which I haven't seen.
But and also you're starting to see how this is blowing up on all kinds of cable channels.
Yeah,
like, Netflix has like, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 series.
Yeah, like the Netflix thing is ridiculous. I haven't seen any of them, but they have Daredevil.
Yeah.
Jessica Jones.
Luke Cage,
and they're going to do Iron Fist. And then they're going to bring all of them into together because they're all in that same universe.
Right.
All of them together with a show called The Defenders.
Right.
That is way too much homework. Like,
yeah.
You can't expect people to, even if, I'm sure they're good. I've heard good reviews, but I can't keep up with all of that.
No. And I like the fact that you're talking about it not being saturation, but oversaturation.
Mm-hmm.
But again, when you look at what has grossed the highest, when you look at like the top 10 highest grossing films, I think pretty much all of the ones that you mentioned, except for maybe X-Men Apocalypse, were in that top 10, or at least in the top 20.
I know Civil War grossed over $1 billion. Suicide Squad got at least close to that. Deadpool got close to 800, but I think it's the highest grossing R-rated movie of all time.
Yeah.
Doctor Strange, I think, put in at least $500 million.
Yeah.
X-Men, even though that was a low grosser, still put $500 million. And even though people said Batman v Superman was a flop, it made like close to $900 million.
Yeah, it made a ridiculous amount of money. And that's another thing, too. Like, I can't remember. You did see that, right?
Batman v Superman.
Yeah.
That's the one I haven't seen.
Okay.
I'm just kind of tired. After Suicide Squad, which, like,
see, I didn't see that one, but I saw the director's cut of Batman versus Superman, and I honestly don't get why people have so much hate for it, because I didn't think it was so bad. But then again, the person that had me watch it said, "You can't watch the theatrical release.
Hmm.
It doesn't make any sense. You have to watch the
director's
cut."
Yeah, because that's the main thing. Everybody says it's a lot of just, it's all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just hopping around. Like, I know people said they got sick and tired of the dream. There's a lot of flashbacks and dream sequences.
Right.
There's this goofy thing where Superman and Batman stop fighting because their mommies have the same name.
Right, yeah.
And then the Doomsday character, which anybody who knows anything about comic books, is one of the most iconic stories in Superman. Like,
mm-hmm.
this is the thing that killed him.
Right.
And they just randomly bring him into the third act. And
right.
In the first movie, I mean, people were talking about, this is like when you've established the Justice League and you've had a few movies with him, that's when you bring him in. You don't bring him in this movie when it's really early. And
right.
We all know he's going to come back in Justice League, so why even tease us with that?
Yeah, I don't know if it was just that they were trying to shoehorn too many things.
Too much.
Because they feel like they're so far behind the already...
Exactly.
You know, created universe of the Marvel is like, we better catch up.
Yeah, but it's either playing catch up. Like,
yeah.
You know, like, even though I'm not entirely in love with the Marvel movies, they did it right. Before they did the Avengers, they gave us 2 Iron Man movies, a movie with Thor, a movie with the Hulk, and a movie with Captain America. And then you also threw in brief little snippets in those movies with Hawkeye and Black Widow.
Yeah.
So by the time you get to the Avengers, you've had that buildup.
Yeah.
This is, you get 1 Superman movie in 2013, and then we're just going to throw Batman, and then we're going to throw in Wonder Woman, and then
right.
we're going to give you a brief cameo with Cyborg and The Flash.
Right.
And Wonder Woman, whatever. It's just too much.
Yeah, it was too much.
Well, I guess we'll get out of the comic book. We don't want to oversaturate.
You don't want to say anything about Deadpool?
I like Deadpool. I thought it was really good, and I was surprised. Like, it's got a lot of recognition at the Golden Globes.
Yeah, well, and that kind of goes back to what they were doing a couple of years ago with trying to open up the field of best pictures or just things that are being considered.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think the Golden Globes is kind of clever because they don't try to put dramas in with comedies.
Yeah.
Because most of the time, that's going to be a fight that's always going to be won by the drama people. And if it's serious, then it deserves more of our credit, whereas if it's funny or lighthearted... You know, very rarely does a comedy get the same kind of consideration. So I like the fact that the Golden Globes does that. But, you know, when we have the Oscar season coming up, and it used to be just about five pictures.
Now it's like
eight.
Well, yeah,
eight to ten.
Eight up to ten. And I think that was sort of the backlash that in 2008, The Dark Knight didn't even get nominated.
Yeah, it's kind of like, not to liken it to anything recent, but, you know, you have the popular vote, the people that, you know, pay with the dollars, and that's what wins that battle versus, like, the critical vote. And they're like, nobody's wanting to watch the Oscars anymore because it's all these five really depressing movies that nobody's seen except for people that are really into film. So that's when you start to get things like Mad Max being up for Best Picture and stuff like that.
Mad Max was awesome.
Mad Max was awesome. But it'll be weird to see. I'm really kind of looking forward to seeing what they throw into the mix for this year's Oscars because, you know, even if it's like an 8 to 10 movie field, none of those are going to really be representing anything significant as far as box office is concerned. I mean, Moonlight, which we were talking about right before you started today, has only made something like $14.7 million. Mm-hmm. It's been out for over 12 weeks.
Yeah.
Bye Bye Man that came out last week, in its first 3 days, did $13.6 million. So in 3 days, Bye Bye Man, which is... And I'm sorry, I know I haven't seen it, but it's a piece of crap,
yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
Is that, making as much money.
It's January. There's so many awful movies out.
Yeah, but
you're still getting those Underworld and Resident Evil movies. I didn't even know were still out. But
it's still, I mean, that's what people want to see. So, you know, it does create a lot of cognitive dissonance there. It's like, what do we mean by when we say best movie? So...
So we'll get out of the comic books talk. So I guess we'll go like one of the a film I'm not sure if you've seen. It was one of the earlier films this year in February. It was called Hail Caesar, Coen Brothers.
And that's another one where I heard a lot of really mixed
things
about it.
It's very mixed. Like, it's funny, you look at like Rotten Tomatoes. It's got like an 80 something percent by critics, but like users gave it like a 40.
Yeah.
I overall enjoyed it. It's not their best. It's not as good as, you know, it's nowhere near as good as like a Fargo or No Country or any of that, but it's still a solid movie. And the reasons why I really liked this movie was the character is I forget the character's name. He's like Toby something. He's like this goofy cowboy, like an Audie Murphy type, because this movie takes place in old Hollywood. And it's played by Alden Ehrenreich, who's going to be the next Han Solo in that next movie. And he is fantastic. He's hilarious. He plays this lovable idiot, but he kind of figures out what's really going on. And he's if anything else, watch him. Watch the movie for his performance.
Oh, sure.
Because he's fantastic.
I want to watch it anyways.
Yeah.
Because I'm always willing to give the Coen brothers the benefit of the doubt. And a lot of times, too, especially with Coen brothers movies, is that people don't appreciate it right away. Like, when Big Lebowski first came out, nobody saw it.
Everybody thought it was terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now it's like, you know, people can quote the entire movie and they have conventions for the Big Lebowski. So...
Yeah, for this is one of those movies you got to watch a couple times. Because I've only seen it once, but I can tell, like, I didn't get everything in there.
There's
their
movies are like that.
Yeah, you got to watch, like when I watched Inside Llewyn Davis for the first time in 2013, I didn't like it.
I didn't either.
Watched it, like, a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah?
I really, really liked it.
Oh, so I need to go back and watch that one again.
So they're like that. You got to watch them a couple of times.
I was like that with Napoleon Dynamite. First time I watched it, I was like... What the hell is this?
I couldn't even make it through that. I watched like
and the second time I watched it, I was cracking up. So
I'll have to check that.
One of those things too.
So I guess we'll go chronologically. Then March, Disney's earliest hit, which is a surprise hit for March, it grossed over $1 billion, was Zootopia.
I didn't see that.
It's people say it's this fantastic, wonderful movie. I really liked it, but I'm a little also, if there's a superhero fatigue, I've also a Disney fatigue with me. So maybe that got in the way. It's funny. It teaches good lessons to kids. I didn't fall in love with it.
Well, what are the lessons? Because I heard that it has a lot to do with tolerance.
Tolerance,
is that right?
Yeah. And it's sort of this, it's a bunny who, she becomes a cop in like this big city of Zootopia. And she thinks it's going to be this wonderful job and everything, but there's a lot of prejudices going on.
Okay.
Like there people are afraid of foxes because they're predators. And there's this sort of thing that's causing all the predators to resume to their predatorial instincts and turn them into killers. And so it creates this fear in that community. And so through that, she sort of learns and everything. It's a good story about that. still, I didn't fall in love with it.
So you're not, I mean, like, you wouldn't be one of the people that'd be like, I understand why that won the Golden Globe for Best Animated Feature.
It's because of the message. I mean,
okay,
it's a good message, but that doesn't necessarily mean I absolutely loved it, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a really important point now, because I think within the next few years, we're going to start to see a lot more message movies coming down the pike.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that, the theme of the movie and the point it's trying to get across is definitely important, but does that then mean that every other aspect of the film takes a back seat because the message was so good? Like... Mm-hmm. Because like what you're saying with Zootopia, I think, I mean, did you see Kubo and the Two Strings?
I haven't seen it yet.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I found it online. I'll check it out eventually. And I actually watched, he was the director of that movie. He was on Turner Classic.
Oh, and cool.
He was talking, he was doing an introduction of stop motion movies like King Kong and the original Clash of the Titans and a couple other stuff. And they were in between. Ben Mangan was just asking about how long he worked doing Kubo, and he said he would work hours a day, and the stuff that would take a day, like, it would amount to like 10 seconds of screen time.
Oh yeah.
I tried a little stop motion when I was in my film class, video class. Like I did like a 2 minute thing. That thing took me all day, and I was like, I can't do this anymore.
It's ridiculously hard, incredibly time consuming, very meticulous. Yeah. So, did you see The Box Trolls by any chance?
No, haven't.
See, okay. I definitely recommend not only seeing Kubo and the Two Strings, but also Box Trolls. And anything like Nick Park does, you know, is also something that's very much about the stop motion. And Nick Park always does such a great job with really amazing. Like, last year it was either last year or the year before, Shaun of the Sheep. I don't think very many people saw that movie. That movie's awesome. But, of course, it's always going to go to... Disney, you know, it's always going to be there.
Disney they have it's like you got Star Wars, you got Marvel, you got Pixar, and then you got your own studio. It's just they own everything.
They are Uber. I mean, they are everything. But then again, that's why I was, when I marched into Moana, I was just like, oh, yeah, here's another one by Disney. I'm not going to like this. I'm just because corporate Disney. And you walk out of that singing, you're welcome. You know, I liked it. You know, I could not like it. It was sweet.
Yeah, I mean, I heard it's good. I'm sure it's good. I've given Disney enough of my money. I just, you know, that's how I feel.
Give it a little bit more. Check out Moana. Yeah. Moana was fun.
So another film that for a while was probably my favorite film of the year, probably until a couple months ago, was 10 Cloverfield Lane.
I really want to see that.
Yeah, and have you seen the original?
No, I haven't.
It's good. I've only seen the first one a couple of times, and it's good. It's pretty good. It's a good. And I'm not a big fan of found footage horror movies, but that's one of the good ones. That's an exception to the rule.
All right.
This film blew that out of the water. It's fantastic. It's just a great tense thriller. It's this three people stuck in a bunker together. You know, and you don't know if the guy's really telling the truth or not. And it's sort of real that he is, but even he's kind of John Goodman, he's unstable. And just sort of just Mary Elizabeth Winstead is fantastic in this movie. And, you know, and what's great is it has nothing to do with the original film. Like, you could watch 10 Cloverfield Lane and not watch Cloverfield, and you wouldn't have missed anything. And there's actually, just as far as connections to the movie, there's like the flimsiest of flimsiest. Like, you even have to look it up on the internet to get the reference.
Huh, okay.
But it's almost
but
like...
But they're making more of those, right?
Yeah, they're going to do one this year called God Particle.
Yeah.
And
who's the director on that again?
This one?
Cloverfield, 10 Cloverfield Lane.
This was Dan Trachtenberg. This is his very first movie.
Oh, so it wasn't the same guy that directed Cloverfield.
No, that was Matt Reeves, and he's also doing the Planet of the Apes movies, but...
Oh, okay.
But yeah, a great movie. Anybody listening, definitely check that out. Great thriller. John Goodman is terrifying. And
he's dad, you know.
Yeah. I'm not going to spoil too much. The ending may be a bit silly, but I'll just leave it at that. So cross that off the list. Jungle Book. So one more Disney.
Oh no.
I like this movie. I've saw the original really young as a kid, so it's basically like I haven't seen it almost. I thought this movie was good. I like Jon Favreau. I mean, I think after like Chef, which is fantastic, I think I'm down to see anything he'll do.
Okay.
It's good. It's got great animation. I mean, they shot most of this in green screen, which almost feels like, oh god, it's like the prequels with George Lucas. But like, no, it looks like he's at the jungle. But
Yeah,
it's pretty good. It's not like fantastic or anything, but I give it a thumbs up.
So overall, like, what do you think about Disney doing all these reboots classic?
Yeah, this is one, like I said, with Cloverfield being the exception to the rule of found footage, this movie is like the exception to the rule of all these Disney gritty reboots of old classic.
Because I didn't
movies.
See Peach Dragon, although that was January of last year.
No, that movie came out in the summer.
Oh, was it? Okay, the summer.
Yeah, I haven't seen Peach Dragon.
Even though I loved Peach Dragon when I was a kid, I didn't like The Jungle Book just because I thought they went too dark with it. And, you know, the fact that, spoilers, but, you know, Mowgli's wolf dad gets killed. You've got the Baloo the bear character being a lot more selfish than what he was in the original film. Just like, it's all about just getting the honey and really don't care too much about the kid until kind of later. I don't know. And the whole sequence with the orangutans at the end and all the monkeys and the Monkey King and how that all played out.
You didn't like
just
the Christopher
like
Walken?
This, and I love me some Christopher Walken. And
I can kind of see that.
It was just a gratuitous action sequence. And I wasn't invested in any of the characters at that point. And I was just like, this is not my Jungle Book. But yeah, with like Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah,
and
I think maybe just because I didn't have that connection to the old movie. I mean, the only thing I remember about that movie is the Bare Necessities song. So
yeah, and that's another thing too. This was not a.
So maybe because I didn't
musical.
Have that background.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, a lot of times when you think about these classic Disney movies, you know, there's a soundtrack to them, and you learn the songs when you're a kid, and you go around and you sing. And, you know, they only had like one song and everything else was just more live action. I just kind of wonder, because I know Disney says, at least on paper, hey, this is about introducing these stories, these classic stories, to a new audience and updating for them. So like the Beauty and the Beast and the Jungle Book and the Peach Dragon and Cinderella that they did last year.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they have like a whole bunch of
it's
other
ridiculous.
Ones in the pipeline.
You look at that list, it's even more dense than what Marvel's doing.
Yeah,
like, oh,
and it's
God.
Just like... You got to be able to tell other stories.
Yeah, be original.
Please.
Don't keep. How much time can you draw back from that well? You know.
Yeah, there's more fairy tales out there, guys. You can do it, which is why seeing something like Kubo and the Two Strings, or even Moana,
or even in a sense Zootopia. I mean, it's at least that's original.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so I guess that's kind of like walking back on what I just said, because they can do original things apparently. But I don't know. It just seems like. It's so lazy.
Very lazy. And I guess moving on to the summer, which was pretty, you look at it, not that great of a summer, but one film that ticked me off that it got made no money at the box office, but it's a very good movie, was The Nice Guys.
I love that movie.
Yeah, Shane Black, who was the writer for Lethal Weapon, and what else?
He directed one of the Iron Men's.
Iron Man 3, directed Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, very underrated movie.
Yeah.
This is a great like 70s kind of buddy cop neo-noir.
That was an awesome, awesome movie.
Comedy, and it's hilarious.
So much fun.
Russell Crowe's great.
Ryan
Gosling is fantastic.
Yeah.
It made no money at the box office.
I know.
And
I would have loved to have seen another one too, because they set up the ending to make it look like
says he wants to do it, but I don't know if the studios are.
See, that's the thing. Like, the studios and the money string.
Yeah, it just ticks me off. Like, it comes out, it's the same freaking week as the Angry Birds movie in Neighbors 2. And
woo!
You go see that, and it's like, you know what? If you're one of those people that say, oh, studios never do anything original, you know, it's all franchise and reboots. If you're one of those people and you didn't go see this movie, shame on you. That's all I gotta say. Shame on you.
And I saw one online reviewer talking about...
Because it made nothing at the box office.
They said it was boring. They were like, well, it's very much like an 80s, you know, buddy cop film, and there wasn't a lot of action in it. And I'm like, does everything need to have an action set piece? Yeah, with action. It's like, do we really need that?
It's enough just watching these guys bicker at each other and insult each other.
With good dialogue.
Great dialogue, yes.
You know, everything about that was clever. And yeah, not a ton of plot involved, but, you know, there's...
So,
yeah, go ahead.
So I'll just kind of briefly skim over the other summer blockbuster movies I've seen, along with the superhero stuff. BFG, Steven Spielberg, Jason Bourne, one of the most disappointing films of the year, I think. Just It's just basically, if you've seen the other Jason Bourne movies, you've seen this movie, it's the same thing. They really, you're bringing him back after a decade. You got to add the stakes a little bit higher. And they didn't do that. Star Trek Beyond, my dad's a Trekkie. I'm not. But I've seen all the reboots. They're pretty good. I like this one the best. I think of these three, this one's best. Solid.
So you're J.J. Abrams guy?
He's a, But
I wish the audience could see your facial expression when I said that.
So any other ones? Finding Dory. It's pretty good. It's
another Disney.
Yeah, another Disney. See, I'm giving them enough
Disney,
of my money.
Disney.
And so I want to talk about a little bit of under, like, sort of stuff that flew under the radar. Hell or High Water is a really... Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Your look is like, not overrated.
Initially, and maybe this is one of these things where it's like I heard so much about it beforehand that I was like, this is going to be amazing and good. I thought it was a good movie. And the, constant, this is a modern-day cowboy movie. I really thought it was interesting for the time that it was made in, because it really kind of gives you some insight as to why things went the way they did in the election of 2016. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people out there that have been in dire straits for a long time.
Yeah, in this movie you just see so many people who are just poor and just live in like ratty houses and everything.
Yeah, it really kind of calls back to me like how Bonnie and Clyde made an impact in the late 1960s, mm-hmm. where everybody was like, the government is just screwing us. We're sick and tired of this. So, and it wasn't even the government at that point. In Hell or High Water, it's all about those.
It's the banks. Yeah, it's the banks. This is, I think,
ugly banks. I mean, a lawyer is a good guy in this movie. What does that tell
you? Yeah, I think I could be wrong, but doesn't the movie take place during the recession in 08?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, but it just seems like the people that have been living in that, and he has this speech at the end where he's talking to Jeff Bridges about, ever since I can remember,
I'm
my family's
poor.
Been, I've always been, it's like a disease. It's like a, and you see, like you said, all around that movie, everybody that you see, it's just, they're all destitute. There's no jobs.
Mm-hmm.
They just, there's some people that decide, we're going to take this into our own hands.
Rob some banks.
Yeah. And the way that they lay out how that movie ends is really kind of clever, and how they've got the trust set up at the end and everything. I liked that. I really appreciated that. And I really liked the older brother character.
Oh, Ben Foster?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's terrifying in that movie.
But he's great.
Mm-hmm.
He's
great, yeah.
But I also... How spoilery do you want me to get with this?
Go ahead.
Okay, I was bothered by the fact that, that's their situation, but the end result should not have been, I'll just go out in blaze of glory.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. For me, that was...
Yeah, it's a bit of just moviness. But.
Yeah, but it's like, if you're dead, you can't do anything more about what's going on, mm-hmm. You could move. You could go to a place where, you could go and work on Deepwater Horizon or something. Anything.
Yeah.
But you didn't have to go out like that, because he seemed like a genuinely interesting guy who loved and cared for his family.
Okay.
So that bothered me.
Okay, so another...
Well, what did you think?
I really liked it. I think I liked it more than you did. I thought Texas... Like, this is the best we've seen Texas in a movie since, No Country for Old Men.
I love No Country for Old Men.
And just, the way it looks. And, I love just sort of... And it is sort of, even... They're kind of...
They feel like they're in the same universe, almost.
Yeah, the same universe. But it's funny because, they're angry at being poor and everything. But, the bank that kind of caused you to do this, you're the one kind of going back to them and doing the same thing. So it's sort of like, you don't know what you're doing a bit. But really, really good. Chris Pine is really good.
Yeah, he is.
I love the dude is fantastic. And
Jeff Bridges. Although he seemed to me like he was kind of doing Tommy Lee Jones from No Country for Old Men with
a
southern more twang.
Accent. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I was sheriff of this county for 7 years or something.
Yeah, I mean, so, I don't know. And people were just like, oh, Jeff Bridges is so great in that. And I'm like, I've seen that. So.
Okay. So let me talk about another one I got on my list. Have you seen Hunt for the Wilder People?
Yet? No, I haven't.
This
but
is
I've
a
heard
great,
it's great
movie, and this is I'm gonna probably mispronounce the guy's name. Taika Waititi. He's New Zealand director. Before this, he's probably best known for What We Do in the Shadows, which is a hilarious like a mockumentary of like vampires living together in a flat. It's hilarious. Got to see that. He's on the big run. He actually worked on the script for Moana.
Oh, okay.
And he's going to be directing the next Thor movie coming up this year. Hopefully he's a funny guy. Check this out. It's his kid. He's a foster kid, and he's been going around from home to home, and he bonds with this lady and her husband, who's played by Sam Neill, but as best known as Dr. Grant from Jurassic Park. And so the husband really does kind of just stays away. He's out hunting all the time, and so she's going taking care of him. But one day she dies.
Oh.
And sort of what happens is this is like the certain amount of times he's been going around from foster family to foster family, and now this is the last one, and now he's got to go to juvie. And what happens, he goes on the run.
Yeah.
And it goes on the run in the jungle, and he runs into the elderly father, the elderly father figure. And so it's sort of through mixed misunderstandings as such, they go on the run together like they're partners in crime.
Oh, cool.
And they're stuck in the wilderness out there, and all the police are looking for them. And there's a lot of parts that are funny.
Yeah.
Like there's one part where they're like looking at one of the papers, and the kid's like, the papers say you're cock Asian? Well, they got that wrong, because clearly you're white. there's like a lot of stuff like that that's hilarious, and
that sounds cool.
Definitely check it out. And,
yeah.
And then have you seen Train to Busan yet?
No, but I think you were talking about that a little bit last week.
Yeah,
so.
Fantastic South Korean movie.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, but I think it's either the highest grossing film domestically this year in South Korea or highest grossing film of all time.
You're right. I looked up South Korea box office, and it is the highest money maker.
Best way I can describe this is Snowpiercer with zombies. And I'm not a big zombie guy. I don't watch The Walking Dead and all that stuff, but this is a great movie. It's terrifying. There's this great sequence where where the wife of one of the guys and the daughter of one of the other guys is stuck, and they're hiding in the bathroom compartment. They're surrounded by zombies, and these guys got to go through four like separate car compartments to get to them, fighting off the zombies. And when they get them, they got to go all the way back to safety.
Oh, okay.
That scene alone is worth watching. It's a great movie.
No, I definitely want to see that. I mean, I think I might have brought this up last time when we were talking about Memories of Murder, but Koreans make good movies, so I'm all about that.
Exactly. And so a film I think was sort of nobody's talked about, which I'm surprising, is Eye in the Sky. It's Alan Rickman's last movie.
I've heard that that's good. I really want to see it.
Fantastic. It's
Helen Mirren.
Yeah, and it's a lot of very connectable to kind of what people deal with, what the military deals with about drone warfare, because there's a situation where they're taking out this terrorist where they know for sure that he's going to carry out this attack on a mall or something that's going to kill hundreds of people. But something, and they're about to lay the attack, but something happens. I'm not going to spoil it.
Yeah, because I do want to see that.
Something happens where they got to, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Yeah. And it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Just watch it for Alan Rickman's performance.
I love
the line,
Alan Rickman.
There's a line he gives about a soldier's duty, and the very last part, it's really, really just fantastic. You got to check it out.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely checking that out.
And so what other underrated movies? A film that got crapped on a lot, and I didn't think that deserved to be crapped on a lot, was The Accountant. Have you seen that?
No, but I want to see it. I don't have any problems with Ben Affleck. There's some people out there that just don't like him.
Yeah, I think it goes back to that whole relationship he had with J-Lo when it was all over.
Oh, wow.
It was everywhere, but, you know, I gotten over
it. What was that movie they were in together?
Geely.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's a crappy movie, but, like, you know, he's not a fantastic actor. He's a better director than I think an actor. But
okay.
It's a decent movie. The trailer, like, is fantastic. Like, watch the trailer
first. Yeah, I've seen the
trailer, yeah. Really good. The movie's pretty good. It gets the problem is I have with it. It gets way too like Shyamalan twisty at the end. Like he's this person and this person is this person at the end, and that brings it down.
Lazy.
Still pretty good.
Okay, no, that's cool. Yeah, I've heard good things about that too.
Okay, so now we will. Okay, so before we dive into the rest, I have is Oscar contenders. I think so. With one last blockbuster, we talked about it a bit. Rogue One.
Yeah. I mean, I really liked it because it seemed to up the stakes And then, you know, I watched, you know, Mr. Plinkett tear it down, and I'm like, wow, I guess, you know, they really didn't need to use those giant walkers.
AT-STs, AT-STs.
Yeah, and the whole, you know, the fan service thing, and, you know, the shots that he has in that video of people, like, watching the trailer and crying and stuff.
Oh, God, I hate that. Anyway, Rogue One. Overall, I mean, it's a BB plus for me. I enjoyed it.
It was fun.
Main part, we both like Donnie Yen.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And it delivered.
Although,
and the Donnie Yen
when we get to my list, I'll be talking about Donnie Yen.
Okay, it delivered with the Donnie Yen on this scene, which is just awesome.
Yes.
When he takes out the stormtroopers, that was awesome.
Yeah.
Liked to see a bit more of that, but overall, because of the Donnie Yen, other parts, it's
Mads Mikkelsen's in it.
Yeah, even though he doesn't do much. But yeah.
He's the fulcrum that everything kind of goes into a spin on this one for. But
okay, so now we get into Oscar movies.
Da-na-na-na.
So first one, well, the earliest one I probably saw was Sully. I don't think Clint Eastwood's Sully. You didn't see it yet?
No, I didn't see it, but I, you know, yeah, why don't you talk about that?
It's, okay, so obviously it's about the guy that landed the plane in the Hudson.
Right.
And it the way he does that whole scene, he does it multiple times through multiple viewpoints, sort of like a Rashomon, but like nothing changes or anything. But,
oh. That's a point.
Yeah, it's like, no, the plane really did sink. No, but... But it's that part is very well. That's probably the best part of the movie. And he goes through all the other people in it. Hanks, which, I mean, is great, which, you know, that's kind of goes without saying. Some people kind of find it boring just because there's a lot of extra stuff in there. The main criticism was that all that stuff, or did you really need to do this? That didn't happen. But I think it didn't happen, but he felt that. After that, like, he thought, I put these people's lives in danger and I didn't need to. I could have landed this plane at LaGuardia and avoided all of this. He felt
could
that.
Could he have?
No, because it was.
Okay.
It was pointed out that he couldn't, but he felt that. He had this doubt and he had suffered a lot of PTSD.
Oh.
Like in the movie, he gets a lot of nightmares.
Yeah.
About, like, in this time, he crashes the plane into a building or something. So it does it. It's very good. I think, you know, not a heck of a lot to go on with just this, you know, basically for a thing that happened in 3 minutes.
Yeah,
like,
really.
Like 10 minutes or whatever it was. But he, stretching that out to a movie, he did a good job. So maybe not the best movie there, but still another solid movie from Clint Eastwood as a director.
All right.
Okay, then we will talk about Arrival. Now,
okay.
I'm going to say this, Denis Villeneuve, hopefully I'm pronouncing that right.
Right.
I've been a fan of his ever since Prisoners, then Enemy, then Sicario last year with Arrival, and then he did a film earlier called Incendies, which I'm pronouncing that right.
Okay,
this guy is the next Kubrick. I'm going to say that right
now.
This guy is the next Kubrick. He's that good. And Arrival is his best movie. Have you seen it?
Yeah,
okay.
I did.
Like, I loved the best part of that movie is how we see the montage at the beginning with, not going to get spoiled, but the montage at the beginning, and it feels like, oh, she, you know, we see her later on, like, she's sullen and sort of sad because of that. Then we sort of figure out what happens and why why the aliens visited there, and we realize, whoa, like, that for the twist at the end, like, that wasn't like this was like this,
right?
That blew me away. Like, I came out of that theater like for five minutes I was left speechless. I thought, like, that is such a brilliant twist. That's one of the great, like, twist endings I think in history.
Okay.
That was so good. And all the other movies, like, Amy Adams is fantastic. You got other people like Remmer and Forest Whitaker that are fine. I really, really enjoyed this movie.
Well, we definitely don't want to get spoilery about it, but
yeah, I don't want to say too much.
For me, there was something that happened with that movie that I was like, you just screwed this up royally. And, you know, I thought that part was really poignant, but at the same time, the fact that the way they get there got so goofy to me that I was like, damn, this could have been really, really, really good and really strong.
It's just really good.
And then it's just good for me.
Oh, okay. Well, we disagree there because I think this film is one of the best of the year. But...
Okay. No, that's fine. There's a lot of people that really like it.
I mean, I can see your point. Like, yeah, like, wouldn't everybody have that thing? But I think for the most part, like, it's an A+ for me.
Hey, no, that's cool.
Okay.
That's very cool.
Okay, so then other one, I think I'm probably going to give my best film of the year, even though I haven't seen a couple other films yet. I'm going to go with La La Land.
Yeah, that's such a fun, happy movie.
Great movie. This is the guy that did Whiplash, Damien Chazelle.
I love Whiplash.
And he gets, and as great as that movie was, I think this movie is even better. Mm-hmm. It's like what's the last time like an original musical with like not like that movie with the talking animals that are singing like Lady Gaga and
right,
like actual people singing original music.
Yeah,
and it's just, and like the dancing is great, the music, songs, and like even the music itself. Like my favorite scene is when they're dancing together in the planetarium.
Yeah,
that is such a good, it's such a good movie.
I think your part about the originality of it is important, because when you look at something like Moulin Rouge, where all of the songs that were in it, or something like, what was the one, Knight's Tale, that Heath Ledger did, and all of the songs were from, you know, contemporary time period, these are all original songs. They're not based off a Broadway play or anything like
exactly.
that. Not like Chicago, which was just an adaptation of the Broadway play. This is straight up totally original. And the songs are great.
Fantastic.
You know? And everything about it, you know, because somebody, I was watching somebody talk about the sequence where they're dancing after they've come out of that party and he's taking her to the car, and you can see LA behind them, and it's getting progressively more and more dusk. Mm-hmm. And somebody was like, oh, they must have CGI'd that. And I'm like, no, I don't think they did. I think that's somebody that planned things out. You know, because you can do that if you have good enough people.
Yes, not everything requires CGI. You can
do
stuff by yourself.
Right, exactly. So, I was just like, you know, it's not about CGI. It's about or the sequence on the highway. There's online interviews with Chazelle, about how they had to stage that and how things went really, really wrong when they finally got to, because they had that overpass for like 2 days, mm-hmm. and how everything that they, because they had already rehearsed the hell out of that, mm-hmm. in a soundstage, so that when they got to the location, they could do it. They got to the location, and they figured out that they had all these technical problems, and that the cars, and they wouldn't be able to move the camera, mm-hmm. certain ways, and they had to like completely scrap a whole bunch of stuff and start over. But that was not CGI'd.
No, it doesn't sound like it.
So the word original, I think, really comes across very well with La La, mm-hmm. Land, and it's sweet.
Yeah, and it's a classic throwback to the musicals of the 50s, like a Singing in the Rain or something. There's even like a couple references I noticed to like an American in Paris or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, and it's not like too dependent on that, though. It's fantastic. If you haven't seen it, shame on you. Go watch it. But
yeah, really go watch it. And another thing, too, is that Ryan Gosling is not trying to put himself out there as the best singer in the world, or Emma
Stone. I thought they did a good job, though.
They did a good job. But, you know, it's like when you saw Les Mis, where
Russell Crowe
and Hugh Jackman obviously can't sing, but like Russell Anne Crowe Hathaway can. And stuff like that, they were making it out to be like so serious, and you know, mm-hmm. I'm doing really good at this, and it's just like there's not that same pretension.
Yeah,
with this
and like
movie.
In the end, one thing I like, because I'm not a huge musical fan, because I think sometimes like it's too over layered, like talk mm-hmm. for 2 minutes song, talk mm-hmm. for, mm-hmm. like in Les Mis, I think it's all song,
yeah.
it's just all singing, which that would just irritate me.
Yeah.
With this movie, it's like there's a lot of parts where it can go like 20, 30 minutes and there's not a single dance number.
Right.
And I think I love that. Like, it's, you're almost not overly reliant on it.
It's almost like they listen to people like us about what we don't like about musicals and went, you know what? Let's just take that out.
Mm-hmm. It's a musical for people who hate musicals.
Yeah, it really is. So go see it.
Okay. And so another one, now you have an interesting excuse for not wanting to watch this movie, but Fences, because you said that you like the play.
I really like the
play. And I think it's a great, and Denzel's great as usual. Viola Davis is great as usual.
I'll see it. I'll go see it.
Yeah,
I just
check it out.
He's
probably going to win
the Oscar. I hate what happens with the Rose character in that play. That's just so hard. What he does to her, like,
yeah, it's horrible.
I end up hating Troy Maxton more than a lot of characters in like even superhero movies that are villains. He's just a horrible, horrible person.
Yeah, I mean, but in the movie, though, you sort of, like, he tells his backstory.
Yeah.
And you sort of understand why he's like that.
It's just a bad choice.
Yeah, one complaint I do have with the movie is Denzel directed it. And I feel with the direction of the movie, as far as camera work, it's very basic. There's nothing like, that's a great shot. It's like, nothing's terrible. It's nothing's like, oh, that's awful, or that's out of focus or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very basic. I think he wanted to draw attention to your performances, but as far as like editing or cinematography, it's basic. Not bad, but you know, very forgettable as far as that kind of work.
I think the same thing about what was the the movie last year that won Best Picture.
Spotlight.
Spotlight.
Yeah.
That's a very by the numbers. Let's set it up so that we can see everybody in frame. We can see their spatial relation to each other. We can see, but yet we can also see all their facial expressions.
Yeah.
Sometimes you don't have to get tricky.
Yeah. As Hitchcock would say, he calls that photographs of people talking.
Yeah. And there's a lot in things that are based off of plays.
And then another one I just saw recently. Have you seen the new Scorsese film, Silence?
No, did you see it?
It's brutal. Yeah. I will say it's 2.5 hours of just suffering and torture and depression. Yeah. But it's one of his best, I would say.
It's you gotta like, respect you know,
this.
Him.
Yeah, and just once again, making a. Like, I would say, I've said this many times, of the film brat generation, of that, of your Coppolas, your Spielbergs, your Carpenters, all those people, he's the only one, I think, left who's still making outstanding movies of, like, that can compete with his prime.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's a lot of integrity to Scorsese because, like, if you know anything about the backstory of this movie, it's been almost, like, 3 decades of him trying to make this movie. You know? You don't get that with BFG, you know? Spielberg, there's definitely an aspect of him that's about box office. And maybe that's because it's more expected of him. I don't know. But I don't think Scorsese is like that. He's made plenty of things that have not made a ton of money.
I think Wolf of Wall Street was his highest grossing. That only did $300 million, which...
And that was, you know, because it was up for a lot of awards. There's always a bump when you get awards like
that. Yeah, so... But he's
has integrity.
The man's a legend.
Yeah, he has integrity, and he's not going to bow to like the Hollywood system just in order to make a buck. He is like the anti-Disney.
He just makes and he's at this point where he can do whatever he wants because he's Martin Scorsese. And
yeah.
Even if the movie flop doesn't make a lot of money, it doesn't matter because he's Martin Scorsese.
Right.
You know,
Whereas, with BFG flopping, now everybody's like, okay, so we did Bridge of Spies, we did BFG. Both of those movies didn't make a lot of money. Gee, Spielberg, you're just not on top of your game anymore. Mm-hmm. And those movies, you know, like, I don't know about BFG, but Bridge of Spies was a good movie, but it wasn't just like, I wasn't sitting around afterward talking a lot about it.
I was like, that was good. Okay, what's next? Yeah. Like that.
You know, but I can remember pretty much shot by shot everything I ever saw in Jaws, so I don't know.
Yeah. Just like I say, last great movies, like I said, Lucas hasn't done anything since probably the original trilogy. Coppola, ever since the 70s, he's made a couple of decent ones. Like I'm less harsh on Godfather 3 than everybody else is, but Coppola hasn't.
Are you lonely for that?
Yeah,
sorry.
I'm lonely for that. Yes, I am. But Coppola hasn't really done anything since
the
70s. Carpenter has even retired. He hasn't, and he fell off after the 80s. And you got somebody like De Palma who's never really hasn't done much in a while.
You know who still does some interesting things every once in a while?
Who?
Polanski.
Yeah, but Polanski, I'm talking about, like, he was a little bit before that film school generation. I'm like, people who were born, like, the 40s came of age in the 70s.
Yeah, but I mean, like, he was doing Rosemary's Baby at the same time, you know, you've got Coppola doing The First Godfather. About the same time.
Yeah, okay.
Mid to late 60s.
Yeah. So, but of that film, I would say Scorsese is the one who's still outperforming.
Oh yeah,
I
would definitely agree with you there.
All right, and so last one on my list, we have got a little bit of time left to talk about, is Moonlight, and I just watched this film last night, and once again, very emotionally devastating movie.
Yeah.
You really feel for this character and what he goes through. A couple of complaints could have been maybe stretched out a little bit more in some places. I would like to see a couple more from the two characters we talked about earlier. But besides those little nitpicks, I give this thing an A. It's fantastic.
It's
amazingly well acted by people I'm not that familiar with. The only person I've seen before is Mahershala Ali from House of Cards.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah. And then he's playing something very different here. I really appreciate what they were trying to do with this film. And I think we might have brought this up before, or maybe it was off radio, but... that whole backlash against the Oscars so white last year, we're starting to see the fruits of that now. We're starting to see like things like Fences, Hidden Figures.
Yeah, like there's so many good movies that are predominantly African American related. Like,
it
would be impossible to not give like a lot of recognition from that in the Oscars.
But I also think that, you know, there are a lot of stories that you can tell. I think there's still a little bit far too much on let's just focus on poverty. I don't think that's fair.
That's a good point.
Yeah, they have a lot of really a good. I mean, like, you're right. The acting in this is tremendous. The direction in it is tremendous.
Mm-hmm. That opening take is really good.
But a lot of times when we see films primarily centered on African American community, it's things like American Gangster or
The Wire
or The Wire. You know, just like everything about the society and culture that is bad or negative or hurtful or harmful. You know, a lot of what happens in Moonlight is centered around drugs, whether you're addicted to them or selling them,
mm-hmm.
And how that affects
or you're related
world.
To somebody who's addicted to them or selling them.
Right. So that's why I'm hoping that we start to see more things like Hidden Figures. And even though Moonlight was a great movie, less things like Moonlight.
Yeah, and I will probably check out Hidden Figures sometime. But yeah, from what I've heard, that's a good, like, you know, fist in the air kind of type
movie. It shouldn't always be all depressing and you know, just completely
gritty
desolate. You know, it's just I don't think that's a fair representation of the community.
Very good
And that's
point.
The thing that we see a lot. So.
Okay.
So, do I get to talk now?
Yes. Go ahead.
Okay.
I know.
No, you're. You know. Wait a minute. Did you see? Because what are some other ones? I'll just start going through my list because I have a lot. I apparently went to the movies a lot, and I saw some things that I thought were really good, and some things. And there's a lot of it actually that you can check out on Netflix now that are streaming now. Prescription Thugs. Okay. I can tell by your face you haven't heard of it.
Is it like a documentary?
Yeah,
okay.
It's about addiction to prescription drugs, but it also starts to get more into what is wrong with American culture and society. And initially, when I started watching it, because the guy that's doing the documentary kind of seems like he's not going to be incredibly reliable, or, you know, isn't very authoritative.
Mm-hmm.
He's just kind of like this big dude where he had made a previous documentary about steroids.
Mm-hmm.
And initially I thought, this is the kind of movie that they make in order to show boys in middle school and high school about why you shouldn't get on steroids or why you shouldn't get on drugs. Because there's a lot in the beginning that talks about the WWE and UFC and the people that they're interviewing. The further it goes, the better it gets. And I, after that movie, for days, I was thinking about stuff that they were talking about.
Wow.
To the point of where I think I'm going to be using it for some of my classes in the spring. So it's not very long, and I think that
Is that going to get a best documentary nod?
No.
No.
Which is, again, too bad, because I think it really brings up a lot of interesting points about American culture and what's wrong with us versus other societies that are first world countries. We just have a lot of really significant problems with the way that we deal with things.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought it was really thoughtful, and I didn't expect that when I sat down to watch it.
Okay.
Ip Man 3. Did you
see
the
film? Yeah, I thought that was a 2015 film.
Nope, it was 2015, but the thing is, I looked at everything as far as it was released in America.
Oh, yeah,
so some of these things kind of creep in a little bit. But
yeah, that's awesome.
I was really kind of disappointed in that, even though there were some things about it that were good.
Yeah,
it shows me Donnie Yen's getting a little old.
I
don't want that.
I think what about that movie is that... It was like I felt about Ip Man 2. It's like, it's so weird that the story is just, like, the first half of the movie, it's about, like, the problems with the school and the Mike Tyson character.
I'm like, what's Mike Tyson doing this? And you get to the second part of the movie and you're like, oh, that's what he's doing.
And then the second half of the movie, it's completely changed to this other. And I was like that in Ip Man too, and it didn't quite work for me with those
two. You know they're doing a fourth one?
Yeah.
Coming out in 2018.
This one, they got to do Bruce Lee. They got to have Bruce
Lee. Well, he was in there, but that guy that was playing him was so goofy. He's always doing that thing with his nose and just like, okay, there's acting and then there's caricature, and you are way into caricature, so no. Yeah.
The fight with Mike Tyson was pretty cool.
It was cool, but what the weird thing about it was is that versus the last fight that was supposed to be the big fight of the whole movie, you know, Wing Chun style versus Wing Chun style, Ip Man gets beat up way more by Mike Tyson in the middle of the film than the Wing Chun throwdown at the end. And now it's just like...
It was smart of them not to have Mike Tyson do a lot of dialogue reading, because You would have just had that lisp thing, and I would have been giggling.
Yep, that's Mike Tyson. Yeah. But he's still, you know, look like an absolute predator. Yeah. So
it's great. It's enjoyable. If you like Donnie Yen, check it out.
And I like Donnie Yen. So the next one that I'm going to bring up was also something that was really disappointed in. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Sword of Destiny.
Yeah, I heard that was a stinker.
Oh, no. And I love Michelle Yeoh, and I love the first one. And that was just like, y'all are trying too hard, and it's not nearly as fun. A couple of missteps, like back-to-back for me with Donnie Yen, which kind of was sad, but we skipped that. But one that came out in March, which is also on Netflix now, is called Boom Bust Boom. It was another documentary, and it explained, and it had Terry Jones. It's a British film. It had Terry Jones from Monty Python. In it, talking about not only the 2008 crash, but also economic theory. And it was really interesting and well done. I learned a lot watching it, and I thought it was just going to be, you know, goofy Monty Python stuff. And it wasn't. It was really informative. So
that's interesting. Did he direct it, or he's just
Kind of like the narrator through the whole thing. So, I already talked about Batman versus Superman. Sing Street. Did you see Sing Street?
Yeah, we talked about it. I haven't seen it. You said it's not
it's
all that
cute.
Great.
It's being kind of tossed around in some of these
award
shows.
Yeah, sort of underrated movies you need to watch always on there.
I mean, it was cute. It was fun.
I heard the story is basically guy tries to impress girl, guy starts band, guy impresses girl, gets the girl.
Yeah, and that's, yep. There you go. You don't have to see it.
There.
You just found it out.
Synopsis in 2 minutes.
It's kind of cute, you know, especially if you're into the Stranger Things and you're liking, you know, to see 80s. All these kind of 80s throwbacks because the film is set in the 80s. This is just okay. One film I would recommend that you see out of all of 2016 that I thought was a really good movie and barely made any money was A Bigger Splash. It's got Tilda Swinton, Ralph Fiennes, Matthias, and I never know how to say his last name, Schoensterner, he's some Belgian thing. It's a really interesting movie. It takes place in Greece, present day. Tilda Swinton is kind of like this David Bowie-esque rock singer who has lost her voice. So she's kind of gone to Greece on her doctor's orders to kind of chill out, not use her voice at all so that she can get it back and continue to record. And Matthias is her boyfriend. And Ralph Fiennes is her former boyfriend, and he shows up with this really young girl because him and Tilda Swinton used to be a couple. And he just comes in as like this total force of nature and kind of almost makes it look like he's trying to get back Tilda Swinton's character. But then all this stuff happens and it actually kind of crisscrosses in a little bit to the refugee crisis.
In Syria?
How you have so many people trying to get into Europe. And it's really an interesting movie.
Interesting.
And I'm not going to say anything more about it other than just because I don't really see any movies so far that have incorporated that into what they talk about. I'm not saying that it factors in hugely, but it does have a really specific part of the movie that hinges on it. It's a really, really interesting movie. So, you know, if you're... check it out.
Okay.
The movie I hated the most this year was The Lobster.
Yeah, you told me.
Yeah.
It's gotten good reviews, so...
Yeah.
But I've heard a lot of people who also say, like, this movie's stupid.
If you hate humans, then you might like The Lobster. Because, you know, even though I wouldn't say I'm an incredibly optimistic person, I've never seen human beings treated so pessimistically than The Lobster. We are just total pieces of trash. We are just... And, you know, yeah, we're self-interested, but to the point of where you're physically harming people. It's kooky, and a lot of people like it because it's different. And it is different. You know, the idea that you have to have a mate. If you don't have a mate, you're sent to this place where you have to find a mate in a certain period of time or you're turned into an animal. So you have all these people trying to pair off, not because they really like each other, but because they don't want to be turned into a lobster or whatever, you know, animal that they've chosen. Just some really, really horrible things that people do to each other in this movie, and to themselves, actually, too. It's just the most horrible view of people. So if you like that, watch The Lobster, but don't talk to me.
Okay. All right.
Did you see Raiders, the story of the greatest fan film ever?
I heard it's, is it interesting or is it kind of...
No.
No? Okay.
No. I would say it's pretty much a huge waste of time because you are watching middle-aged men try to pursue finishing a dream of theirs that they started in high school for really selfish and in some cases actually detrimental outcomes. That's also a movie that really doesn't portray people all that well. but they're trying to, so that's a weird thing. So I was kind of disappointed with that. Something that I did see, and it's on Netflix right now, is called The Last King, which was really interesting. It's a film about the last Norwegian king, and it's set in like 1217. So if you like things like Skyrim, this looks like Skyrim because it's all snow and everything. Okay. And you actually learn a lot about Norway. I know absolutely nothing about Norway. The movie was awesome and really kind of interesting. And that's why Norway kicks everybody's butt when it comes to any kind of winter sports. I mean, they've been doing it for forever and ever. And you watch these guys.
I'm thinking of the show Lillehammer. Right?
Yeah, but like you see them, you know, skiing. They have really some great skiing sequences. And it was just really cool. I enjoyed that. Did you see The Infiltrator?
The Bryan Cranston one?
Yeah.
No, I heard it was just eh.
It was okay, but it was fun to watch. Again, kind of going back to what you said at the beginning of this, it wasn't the worst film in the world, it wasn't the best film in the world, but it was entertaining.
Yeah.
Bryan Cranston is entertaining to me, so.
Oh, yeah.
Was he
yelling in that movie?
In parts of this,
he always yells like he was uncontrollable.
Most of the time, he doesn't though. Most of it is he's a police officer and he's undercover because he's trying to infiltrate this drug cartel. Mm-hmm. And so when he's that person and trying to infiltrate, he's kind of the badass. But then there are times when he's home with his wife and he's just like an average everyday person. I don't know.
Bryan Cranston and drugs, always a good combination.
Yeah,
right?
If it's on like Netflix or something, put it on. You're not going to have a bad time.
Yeah, all you guys got to do is get Jesse Pinkman.
See, I've never seen Breaking Bad, so I have no. Yeah. Oh my. Now, if you could have seen his expression for that.
Oh, God.
I know. It's a television show. I don't have time for that. I have time for movies. I don't think we talked about Nocturnal Animals. Did you see Nocturnal Animals?
I haven't seen it. I'll probably get it sometime.
That would probably be my second highest film of the year behind Bigger Splash.
Okay.
It's a really, really interesting film. Jake Gyllenhaal.
Amy Adams.
Amy Adams. Michael Shannon is awesome in that movie.
Michael Shannon scares the crap out of me in everything he's been.
But he's
awesome.
Well,
once again, because you haven't seen Boardwalk Empire, but...
No. But I actually do, and I do want to see that, even though it's a TV show.
Yeah, he is creepy in that movie. Creepy in that show.
He's creepy in this, too, but he's like... He's definitely a badass in this movie. If you haven't seen Nocturnal Animals, the opening sequence will probably put you off, because it's very David Lynchian. Just get past the opening sequence, the title sequence, and you'll be fine. Okay.
Okay.
But don't let
I heard the opening title sequence is a bit interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
Best way I can describe it.
Yeah. Another film I hated this year, Allied, with...
You told me it's pretty terrible.
Yeah, pretty awful. And
which was disappointing, because I saw the trailer, I was like, oh, that might be pretty good.
Yeah, it is disappointing. You've got Brad Pitt, you've got...
Marion Cotillard.
Cotillard. You've got World War II, you've got Spies, you've got Robert Zemeckis. It's boring as hell.
Okay. Okay, so we've gone through. I think that covers most all the movies we wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
So anything else you?
I've got Film 101 Thursday evenings. That's about introduction to film. Film 171 on Friday mornings from 11 to 12:20, talking about history of American cinema. And I have an online Humanities 101, which covers the entirety of humanities as far as human beings existed.
All right. So on that note, we will wrap up. And just remember, you can listen to the Armchair Directors every Thursday at 9:30 a.m., Sunday at 2:30 p.m., or anytime at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com under the category Armchair Directors. So this is a super long episode. So we will, I will cut this down to the half hour slot I'm allowed, but I will put mostly the full version online. So until next time, I'm your host, the Armchair Directors, Alex Baker, saying, are you kidding? I'm blind.